This is Larry Beth. Today's date is 20 June 1973. The time is 3:30 p.m. I will be interviewing Mr. John Reed of Birch Run, Michigan. Topics to be discussed are politics, economics, religion, and Indian life. What were the nationalities in this part of Michigan, as you remember them?
Scotch. Tamoth was named for a river in Florida, and the name of the river was Tay. And this place was such a beautiful place, they called it Mouth of the Tay, and when they came here to Tamoth, they called it Tamoth. Montrose was another beautiful place from Florida, or Scotland, and that was named Mountain of Roses. So they called it after that Mountain of Roses. But both townships were settled by the Scotch. Mm-hmm. They had the name, they run like McCormick, McGregor, McFarlane, McGugan, and nearly everybody had a Mick. Father's name was Reed. He didn't have a Mick or Mac to his name. The Scotch really should have been M-A-C, Mac, instead of M-C.
Now, what was the prevalent religion? Were they mostly Protestant?
This was Scotch. Yeah, Scotch Presbyterian. Scotch Presbyterian. And the church, that was, the Presbyterian church started in Scotland, you see, and it was called Scotch Presbyterian. Mm-hmm. But now, I guess, there's just as many Germans preaching from the Presbyterian pulpit as Scotch.
When do you first remember traveling about Michigan? What age and how did you travel?
Well, horseback, mm-hmm. and a little later on, bicycle. Mm-hmm. And I never rode on the train until I was 16, and that was after they built the road over here at Birch. Mm-hmm. People walked a whole lot. My folks, they used to, there was a lady came over from Scotland, said the first time she saw me, I was 3 years old, and too young to leave at home, so the folks took me to this party, told how I was dressed, and all about it, you know. Of course, I can't remember that.
Do you recall?
Father played the violin at these little parties they had, and such like.
Do you recall any plank roads, board roads?
I do. I remember the plank road that ran from Flint to Saginaw. And the road, speaking of timber again, about that big stump I showed you and a picture of, apparently they thought there'd never be any end to the timber, the white pine. Mm-hmm. These planks were 4 inches thick, 8 feet long and 12 inches wide, and they were laid on just girders right on the dirt. And driving into Saginaw, they had two toll gates, one near just the other side of Bridgeport. That was 16 cents for a team and wagon, 8 cents for a single rig, and just a buggy and one horse. And then later on, you took that ticket and you got another ticket to take you into Saginaw. And coming back, if you had a load, you had to take the dirt road, and the one going on the plank road wasn't wide enough for two rigs to pass, you see. Yeah. So you had to take your chance. And that was solid plank from Flint to Saginaw. And I can remember the old plank road.
Is that the old US 23?
Yeah.
That
would be it, yes. They followed through. And then, of course, it was all done away with later on because, they couldn't afford to put in. I can remember in Saginaw where they had the block pavement. Certain streets just... they take the cedar and cut it, I would judge about 6 inches wide, you see, or in length, and then they're laid on the foundation, and well, they get worn a little bit. Clickety click.
What was the foundation that they laid it on?
Well, I think it was right on the clay. As far as I know, I think it was. Whether they had any sand on top of that or not, I just don't know. I remember the first time I was in Saginaw, I was just a kid, and it was a treat, all new to me. I was walking along with my folks, I guess, in one way or another, and that pavement was so rough that the deliverymen, now oysters, they used to put them up in cork cans, and tin, you know, and one had fallen off, and the driver went along, I went out and got this cork can of oysters. When we got home at night, long after dark, the mother cooked the oysters for our supper, and I tell you, it tasted pretty good.
I'll be darned. Do you recall any of the lumbermen, lumber industry?
Or well, in this way, of course, I worked in the lumber woods down at Floodwoods.
Where was the Floodwoods?
Well, it's right where they're growing sugar beets today, all that prairie land.
I see, the prairie
land. Yeah, we cut the logs, and we talk about the young fellas today feeling it hard to get along and such like. We went to bed, the lights were out at 9 o'clock. The log building was heated by a big iron stove and long cordwood, you might 3 feet long anyway, and it was 3 deep. And I step on the top bunk and get up, eat our breakfast, and start off before daylight, walk to the work, to the job where we were working. I was sawing at the time, and you could just hear the trees crack with frost, and all was cold. And our job was to cut 60 saw logs in one day. We never saw the camp any more than when they blew the horn, and we spent our nooning walking from our work, eat our dinner, and walk back again. That was the noon hour we had. $24 a month.
$24 a month.
Yeah. But
how old were you then?
Well, I was just out of the teenage, I guess. Oh, whether I was 20, 21, I should remember the date. And then after the sawing was done, they didn't have snow enough to haul the logs on, you know, to the river. The logs were hauled to the river bank, it was the Flint River, and unloaded, and they were rolled over the bank, as many as could be, and then they put another skid on top of that and kept rolling. Of course, the ice was frozen hard, and rolled clear across the river, and then decked up. I had a decker. The man I worked with, a young fella, he worked right-handed, I worked left. We faced each other, and that made it possible for when he released his cat hook, I held mine, you see. Mm-hmm. And we were called on. It was a frosty morning. It had frozen just enough where the ice had settled and the water came over. It had just frozen enough and a little skid of snow, you could look like solid ice. Well, my partner, as I say, he worked right-handed, I worked left-handed, and this other gang had run across what they call a churn-butted basswood log. You know how to churn butt, they grow big at the butt and taper off. And instead of cutting the small end ahead to catch up with the churn butt, I guess it went head dive right into the river. And he couldn't do anything until we all got over there and pulled it back on the skid. And his cant hook, basswood has a thick, heavy bark, loose somewhat, his tent hook slipped and he lost his footing, and he jumped onto this ice thinking it was solid. He had to jump somewhere. He lost his balance. And first of all, he just went in about up to his waist. And then where the ice, the logs had settled the ice on a slant, he stepped on this slanting piece and he just went over one shoulder and under the other arm and that icy water. He walked all the way back to camp, $24 a month.
How far was it back to camp?
Oh, I don't know, maybe a couple of miles or better. But it was an experience, but $24 worked pretty good.
Was that pretty good wages?
Well,
at that time?
At that time, it was less than a dollar a day. And then one night, we were all ordered out to make ice roads. Had to get out, and I had to call a duck pond, and that, I guess, is where they're raising sugar beets. And maybe that duck pond is filled up today. I just don't know. But we worked there, cut ice, didn't have to be in uniform size at all, hauled with teams and sleighs, and put on the road, and crushed in order to make ice, you know, so they could haul the logs back to the river again, you see, to raft them down. And then in the spring, they were formed into logs and rafts. And whether you know it or not, the maple, oak, beech, and, even elm will sink. It won't float on its own. And then they had to take the ash, white ash, black ash. There were no sassafras that I know of, but they had to have them to put on each end of the raft, you see, to keep the raft from sinking.
Mm-hmm.
If I, someday I've been thinking about when I've seen two rafts of pine logs go down the river here, way, way back in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a real system in doing that, because talk about your car, you know, or your trailer, kind of buckling, you know, if you don't have it just right and so forth, get the swing, and had to do the same coming around the bend in the river. They had to keep it straight. They didn't want the behind end to get there before the first, and they had a system. I could explain that, but it takes quite a little time.
Do you remember when they cleared off the Shiawassee Flats, the prairie farm area over there, and began farming sugar beets?
There was no sugar beets. I can remember when the first sugar beets started. I had an uncle that went west when he was a boy. In fact, he went into the Civil War when he was just a boy. 16, I think it was. He lost his parents when he was just young. They had to ship for themselves. He came back here, and he was telling about in Nebraska, I guess that's about where it started, sugar beet business, about growing sugar beets. And I, of course, knew that they had sugar maple here, but I never heard of a sugar beech. Mm-hmm. And I thought he said sugar beech.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was the beginning. And when we were west, after we left Nebraska for a time in Grand Island, that's where my wife was born, and just across the aisle, not a seatmate exactly, I don't know if they spot an Easterner or not, but we got to talking just across the aisle, and he said that he was the one that introduced sugar beets here in the Michigan. I wish I'd known his name.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one found out where he's from, and you can't remember when they had the coal mines over here near Vern. He said he was the one that opened up the coal mines here in Albee Township. So there's a lot of history, you know. You gain things by looking around and talking a little bit. But on the other hand, my wife's cousin, they were taken up, I guess. Her one cousin was treasurer of the sugar beet company, and I can't think of the name of the company at that time.
Here in Saginaw, they called it the Michigan Sugar Beet Company.
Yeah, that's the company here, you mm-hmm. see. But the man that introduced it, I know the name, but I can't think of it now. I don't know that I have any record of it either.
Mm-hmm.
But it did seem strange to run across these. I've been down in the mine and over here at Aldi, and then they had another mine at St. Charles, another one over near Munger, I guess. Well, it was in Saginaw County, though, this side of Bay County. I forget. Oh, they had a name for it anyway.
How about salt mines?
Well, I can remember the going to Bay City. Winona Beach was a big thing as for a recreation part, you know. And I could see the salt wells along that low ground. Didn't know what they were at the time and found out later. But that was in liquid form. They pumped it, you see.
Brine.
Yeah, just brine. And then, of course, now I guess they can mine it right out. Well,
approximately when was this that you remember going to?
Well, gosh. We might say what? Maybe 80 years ago. And I can't say for certainty about it. But I remember that. It was all new to me. Of course, you take a boy raised in the country without any transportation other than a horse and a wagon or something like that, you know. He don't get very far from home. I can just remember when they built this road over here at Burt. Memories again. But I remember when that road was built. And that was the old CSNM, Cincinnati, Saginaw, and Mackinac. Now, of course, the Ohio company, they've taken it over.
When was that? You can remember when the railroad was built?
I think it was in 1888. If Lou Green was able, Lou's in the hospital, of course, over. He's one of the ones I put the name down. Lou's birthday will be the, I think, the 19th of next month, 19th of July. But I was more than a year older than Lou, and so that's why I made the correction.
Nice. Yeah.
Out there.
That's understandable.
But I remember some of the fellows that worked on the railroad over there, and they had two trains. One went north at 11 and come back at 5. And that was their trip.
Mm-hmm.
And
what were they hauling? What were they carrying?
Well, passengers, produce. They didn't have trucks to truck anything, you know, at all. And in fact, I knew a young boy. That'd be another story. If I get started,
I'll get you.
You won't get home before dark. And this boy, as I say, I've always been interested in boys. I think I was just a little older than this boy. And we never thought anything about walking to Bertrand, walking to Burt, walking to Montrose. And this brother-in-law that I spoke about came from Scotland. He clerked in the store over there. And Bert, I used to be back and forth. So I worked in the store a little bit one time, not much. And Frankie Hall, his dad was a soldier in the Civil War, but he died when Frankie was just a little fellow. And his mother took in washing, did any kind of housework to support the boy. They had a farm over there, the site of Burt. And, well, he just had to go with his mother. As she went out to do a day's work, he had to go, and that's where I got acquainted with Frankie. Just a little fella. He wasn't old enough to go to school. And she used to come over to a family just down the line here a little ways, relatives of mine, and we used to play together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, As I say, that could be a long story. I'll kind of make it short. It's interesting, though.
Mm-hmm.
It impressed me a lot later on. And after the railroad started over here, there was a young, I'll say a boy. He was a teenager, I believe. He had charge. There wasn't an awful lot. The depot, of course, is torn down now, as you know. And finally, the boy became old enough to go to school, and this young station agent said, Frankie, don't you go to school? No. Why? Well, Frankie had a lot of excuses, I guess. Poor boy, I don't think he had suitable clothes to go to school in. And another thing, he didn't have any books. And this agent said, Frankie said, will you go to school if I see to it that you get books? Maybe. He said, I went up and I found out where the books he would need, and I got the books, and he started to school. But just as soon as school was out, he headed back to the depot. And this agent told me this later on. I'll tell you a little bit more of the story later. He would come in there, and if the fire was a little bit low, he'd fix the fire. He'd carry in, and of course, no coal at that time. No, I don't think they did. And he would carry in wood and sweep the floor, clean it up, and then they just watched the operator as he manipulated this calligraphy, you see. Mm-hmm. And I could go back to my story now, I guess, for a little bit. Well, anyway, it was in 1927. I run across that same agent, a gray-haired man, over in Bloomfield Township. I was on a inspection job over there, a government business, and I gave him one of my cards, and he looked at it, and he looked at me. He said, did you know the boy? He said, you acquainted Ron Burke? Oh, yes, was, yes. He said, did you know the boy the name of Frankie Hall? Oh, yes, I said, I knew Frankie first trade. He says, say, wait a minute. I think this man had a store in connection with his job over at Arthur. That's a small town out of Saginaw, over near Tuscola County. And he opened the door, or a drawer rather, and he took out a letter. In fact, he took out several letters, and he read part of it to me. Well, apparently, I guess I'll keep on with this and then go back a little farther. This agent's name was Al Coons, and he had the letter like this. Dear Al, he says, I've got a lot to be thankful for. He says, I'm married. I'm chief dispatcher in Pontiac. I have a nice wife, two daughters. I put one through high school. The other one is in high school, and I think there was another one. And he says, I have a good car, a garage to keep it in. And he says, Al, I got you to thank for it all.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you started me out. Now, that was a fatherless boy.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went on to tell me that Frankie showed so much interest after he come home from school, every day after school, all school days, he'd fix the fire, bring in the wood, and then he'd watch this fella. And he says, he showed so much interest, I fixed him up a temporary business where he could work on it. And he said, after he'd been there for some little time, he said, I made an excuse. Well, I guess it worked. All he had to do is jump on that train, you see, and go into Saginaw, come back on the next one. He went into the operator's office in Saginaw, and he says, say, I've got a kid up to Burt. He says, I want you to send him a message. And he said, that boy took the message. at Burt. Well, from there, he had different jobs. Well, there was Railroad, there was Orville, there was Vern, there was Foster, there was Burt, and Montrose, right straight along. Nearly every little town had a depot, you see. Well, Frank had kind of worked along these different places and wound up as chief dispatcher there in Pontiac.
What was school like? Did you go to school all day?
We spent from 9 o'clock, we had to be at school at 9 o'clock, and we were dismissed at 4. Mm-hmm.
And 9 months out of the year, or?
Nine. These cards give, it was a different school year. I think the way they worked it at that time, the term of school was made to fit the boys that work on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, it'll tell on here. Anyway, somewhere, one of those cards. I think it began in March and let out.
Oh, yeah, summer term commencing May 3rd and closing August 20th.
Yeah, you see that.
And the other term commenced November 1st and closed March 18th. That would be the winter term.
Yeah, well, I think they arranged it so the boys could be home to work on the farm. And so this boy Frankie, I hadn't seen him since he was a boy. And he came up, that brings back old Tama Fair again. Mm-hmm. He came up to the fair, well dressed, and Lou Green over at Burt, they were chums too at Burt, and I asked Lou what he knew about Frankie. Well, he said, I used to get a card from him, but, well, Frankie would be, I don't think he's quite as old as I am, but he wouldn't be a boy by now anyway. But it just showed, and I told this agent that I met over there, I never expected to see him after he left Burt. I said, you did more for that boy than you'd give him a good 80-acre farm.
Yeah.
You give him a good start and put him on his feet. But I think I wrote a story about that. I'll have to look over some of my stories.
Yes, it seems to me like they thought education, even back then, was just as important as we think it is now.
Well, I told at this meeting, and I was golfed, oh gosh, I was golfed by these women. And after they got through their gaff, I just thought, where did these women get their education, and how are they using it today? They weren't ladies, at least they didn't act like ladies. Said to me, my remarks about 63 pupils, and oh, they just gawked. Couldn't think of such a thing. Terrible.
How much did it cost to go to school back then?
Our labor was paid in school taxes. And our school books we paid out of our own pocket, but the way it did. I was the youngest of four that went to school, Dave, Bill, Rob, and myself. And it was a kind of a pass down, you see, hand down. I got some of my school books, yes, but I'll tell you what we took in school, or what I took in school. They taught, as you know, the grade school, eighth grade. After that, we had bookkeeping, algebra, and let's see what's the others anyway, in the 12th grade. We were getting it not in high school, because we didn't have any high school. No high school around except one in Clio, I think, Flint, and maybe Saginaw, and I don't know of any others. And you had to go there, unless you had a horse that could make the trip and back, and then Clio was quite a little ways from our neighborhood anyway. But as far as schooling was concerned, from the time we left the first grade, up to the fourth. Then we took history and United States history, geography, grammar, spelling, all the others that went with it. Oh, hygiene, physiology. You know, that's something that's done me a lot of good. Maybe partly because I live the age I am. Mm-hmm. We learn these things, how people should take care of themselves.